Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. Glad to have all of you with us. If you're listening in real time, it's Monday afternoon. A full week stretches in front of all of us. And in the political world, this is a week where there's going to be a lot going on, some of which we'll talk about today, including the fact that here at GPB, tomorrow night at 7 p.m. live on our TV and radio stations, we'll have the Democratic gubernatorial debate. Thursday night, the Republican gubernatorial debate. So we'll be talking about those events, certainly on Political Rewind. And, of course, primary elections, 1 week from tomorrow. Remember that if you want to watch the show as we're sitting in the radio studio here, you can go to the GPB news page on Facebook, and you'll find us live there. We'd love to have you join us there. Also, leave a comment. It turns out that we have a lot of really interesting people who are watching the show on Facebook Live and leave remarks in the same way that you can tweet us at PoliticsGPB. And if you're watching us, tell us where you are. It's been interesting to see people from all over the state who tell us they're watching us on Facebook Live. Jim Galloway joins me, as he does on Mondays and Fridays. He's the lead political writer for the AJC. And we read him in the Wednesday and Sunday paper. And then, of course, he oversees the Political Insider blog at myajc.com. Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing great. Just kind of counting the days down. Eight to go.
8 days eight to go.
If you haven't seen your candidate make a move now, it's not going to happen.
We're really glad to have back Democratic State Representative Mary Margaret Oliver, a Democrat who represents Decatur. We, you know, during the session, it's hard for you all in the legislature to get over here, and we've missed you. It's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Good. Heath Garrett, Republican strategist, is with us on Mondays. You've represented how many countless Republicans in various campaigns over the year. Who do you have in this cycle?
Well, I've represented most of the good ones, but this cycle is just Chris Carr, our Attorney General.
Attorney General candidate. Okay, sounds good. And Buddy Darden, former U.S. Congressman, member of the House from up in Cobb County. In fact, we have two, if you're watching us on Facebook Live, the two Cobb County men sitting side by side in the studio. And then across from them, Jim Galloway, also a Cobb County guy. Mary Margaret, we're the... You're Decatur. Yeah, I'm DeKalb, too. So, anyhow, thank you all very much for being here today for the show. Jim, let's start, if we can. We've been tracking early voting numbers because we always like to think we can predict what they're telling us about how the election is going to turn out. And what's fascinating is how interesting our theories can be and how usually wrong they turn out to be.
Well, we take these numbers and we crunch them because we have nothing else to crunch. So this, we're dealing with the information that we've being made available to us. And what I've been working with is are some Democratic numbers that have been following the early voting as of Saturday, which is the only weekend day of early voting in this cycle. And we've got 61,622 Democrats who have cast early ballots, compared to 40,039 4 years ago in 2014, which was the last midterm. Kind of a semi apples to apples comparison. It's not quite exact, but basically the story here is that's a 54% increase, which is a pretty big number, even if you consider that in 2014, Michelle Nunn and Jason Carter were kind of consensus candidates. They didn't generate a whole lot of buzz in the primary. But the real stunning number in there is are the percentages of who's voting. You have
African American votes up 38%.
There we go. That's what I was looking
for.
White voters up 68% over 2014.
These are Democratic voters. Presumably, one of the things driving them to the polls is the gubernatorial race between Stacey Abrams and Stacey Evans, an African American candidate and a white candidate. As you point out, that the races are not predictive of how those people in those categories are voting, but it is interesting.
It's again, it's all that we're working with. And what we do know about Stacey Abrams is she's run a campaign that's directed at intensifying the African-American base vote and reaching out to more the political, a little bit more of the political left. And if these numbers are indicative, then maybe the first part of that strategy isn't quite working so well.
Right, let's give
a problem with Jim's analysis, though, is that he's presupposing that this is all driven by the gubernatorial race. But yet you have, I think, an intense feeling at the national level about this current administration, the Trump administration.
I believe that is also
driving a large number of people out. This is not to say that they won't vote in the Democratic primary for governor, but I'm saying that there's an intense amount of interest, especially in the 6th and 7th district in the congressional area, and that's driving people out as well.
Oh, no, no, I don't. These numbers, I don't think they're in any way motivated by the gubernatorial race.
Okay, well, that was my contention that maybe they were, but I get what you're saying, buddy, that in those two districts, particularly where we think there are maybe vulnerable Republican incumbents, people would turn out. Mary Margaret?
Since Donald Trump is president, I think it's clear that we don't know what can happen in 8 days. And that's in my mind all the time. But my personal experience over the last year in the Capitol is that there are 100,000 new people who came to the Capitol. 60,000 came from the Women's March. 30,000 came from Moms Demand Action. March for Our Lives in 2,000 or 3,000 came. Those were predominantly white suburban women. This is my personal observation. I was part of those groups. I talked with many of those people. Those are the exact people who I believe are irritated, agitated, and engaged, perhaps for the first time. And that would explain your numbers to me.
Heath?
I definitely think that we as Republicans need to pay attention to this. The enthusiasm and the base of the Democratic Party has increased, and I think you're seeing that increase. The question becomes, when we get through the primaries and we get to the general election, are the Democrats able to win the swing voters, right? That 10 to 15%, which I don't think is reflected in these numbers. I think these are base Democrats motivated to get more engaged in their primary at this point.
You may be right, but I was wondering, with a 68% increase among white voters, whether we're seeing some suburban women, as we've seen in congressional special elections and in other races across the country since Trump became president, whether they're being energized to turn out for Democrats, whereas presumably they were Republican voters up until now.
And the largest increases in numerically in Democratic ballots requested are coming in the 6th, 7th, and 11th congressional districts, which are all in that northern arc.
And that's Carolyn Bordeaux, that's Congresswoman
Darren Handel.
And Ms.
Rob
LaBeouf.
Woodall
and
in the 7th.
And in y'all's little House district, not a little House district, you have a suburban, excellent Democratic candidate in a Republican district that was won by Hillary.
We're going to talk about those congressional races, especially the 6th and the 7th, in a little while. But, Buddy, make a last remark, because I want to talk more about this and the Democratic gubernatorial contest.
Right. I'm very interested in the intensity factor. That's the one thing that we as Democrats have been missing, is the intensity factor. But it's here this time. And I was so proud, by the way, of Representative Mary Margaret Oliver when she got on to him for cutting off the mics down there at the Capitol.
Boy, that made me mad.
Of course it made you mad. And it made our people, our voters, even madder, because we haven't had this kind of intensity in a long, long time.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the Democratic gubernatorial race. I think it's perfect timing that we have Buddy Darden, who is a supporter of Stacey Evans,
And chairman of the campaign,
Chairman of the campaign, and Mary Margaret Oliver, an impassioned supporter of Stacey Abrams. So we've got, aren't you Stacey Abrams?
No, sir.
I apologize.
I am very happy that we have two excellent, excellent candidates.
I apologize.
Running.
I thought you declared for Stacey Abrams.
Okay, we'll just make Heath over here the Abrams candidate.
I'll speak for the Abrams.
I'm happy to speak for her. She's a star. But I'm not officially on either camp.
Oh, okay.
I'm giving both money.
Okay. You know, pretty smart, Heath, to hedge your bets in a race like this.
There's no question. I'm enjoying watching my Democratic friends try to sort this one out.
All right. And, Jim, you wrote a column that talked about the scorched earth politics that are emerging in this race? Help us understand what you mean by that.
And the changing etiquette, you know, of what are the new rules that are coming about. I mean, of course, you've got a first attack ad by Stacey Evans on Abrams on it's a hope theme attack. It wasn't personal. It was very much policy oriented. You have you've had some outside groups. Black Pack comes to mind, putting some pretty harsh ads on Stacey Evans on Stacey Abrams's behalf. You had the Abrams campaign last week pushing out an article that was posted in The Root, which had a pretty volatile headline in it. The essence of which of a white politician courts black voters after misrepresenting.
Essentially, they said riding on the backs of the pain and disenfranchisement of black citizens,
right. And accusing Evans of trying to hide her race in a flyer that pictured the 14 African American Democrats that were supporting her.
Right. Right. The Root article, buddy, was pretty intense. We've talked about this on the show before. The campaigns themselves are attempting at every turn to downplay this as a race about race. And they're talking about issues that aren't necessarily racial in tone. But the Abrams campaign has come down on her pretty hard in terms of her being a white candidate in this thing.
Yes, and unfortunately, that's going to be the story regardless of how it comes out. But you've got two candidates who are trying to stick to the issue. However, what troubles me most, and ought to trouble, I think, all the voters, are these outside groups pretending that they are being somewhat liberal in their interpretation of the facts, and at the same time acting like they have nothing to do with the campaigns they happen to be supporting. And this is very troublesome, I think very misleading to the public when you've got Black Pack, when you've got this group from here, when you've got the National Rifle Association coming out against this candidate. I think they ought to find some way, if they could, to ban these outside groups.
I'd be happy to ban. Let's go back to United Citizen, which is one of the worst cases the United States Supreme Court has ever done.
Absolutely.
The history of politics in Georgia is based on race and region. And we really cannot deny that in 2018. I do think, however, that the outside groups are representative in one way of how important Georgia is. We're the eighth largest state. Three of President Trump's cabinet members came from Georgia. Two, of course, have been fired by now. But the importance of Georgia in the national political life is significant. And these two excellent Democratic women, excellent candidates, far beyond having no college education, which is some of the other excellent candidates, are running a race that has now national attention.
You know, it's interesting, Heath, that we saw in the special election in the 6th District, John Ossoff versus Karen Handel last fall, that when it came down to it, although John Ossoff got a lot of money from outside organizations in much the way Stacey Abrams has in this cycle, in the Ossoff case, he resisted bringing national Democrats in to campaign for him because he felt it would work against him up in the 6th District. Stacey Abrams is raising money from across country, and she is encouraging leaders to Kamala Harris was in Friday night on her behalf, and she is a real rising star in the National Democratic Party. In the long run, is this going to work against if Stacey Abrams is a candidate, will Republicans be able to use that sort of thing against her?
I think we as Republicans are watching this race along the lines of race, right? Because nationally, Democrats try to make race issues a general election against Republicans. Now in the city of Atlanta's mayoral runoff, and we're about to have it in the Democratic Party primary for governor, race is the predominant issue for the Democrats, and it's interesting to watch these trends, and I think that will affect the general election, number one. But number two, yes, Stacey Abrams has moved farther to the left than any other Democratic potential nominee in Georgia history, and you add on that the issues of race in that, and these national groups coming in and defining it in a way that I think is going to be concerning. I always believe that the disease is not the cure here, and it seems like we're going back to racial politics in the Democratic primary, and that's concerning to me as a post-desegregation Georgian, that we've got to figure out a way to – we can't define all of our politics in the future by white, black, whatever that is, and but unfortunately we're headed in that direction here. But there's no question I think it's going to hurt the Democratic nominee in the general election, bringing in national Democrats and national Democratic money. The state is still a center-right state in the general election.
Jim, Stacey Abrams' campaign released a commercial a TV spot that responds to Stacey Evans. And the quick setup is Stacey Evans has accused Abrams of making a deal with Republican legislators around reducing funding for the Hope Scholarship two sessions ago?
In 2011.
2011. Oh, that long ago. Okay. Okay. I didn't realize it was that long ago. And Evans has been hitting her hard. She even had a spot in which she had a young African-American woman presenting herself as a college student saying, there are a lot of young people like me who can't get Hope scholarships because of what Stacey Abrams did.
Right. And you have to really parse some of these arguments. I mean, Stacey Evans' argument was that there was a 97% decrease in the number of African Americans who qualified for full Hope rides. This new ad by Abrams says, okay, but 100% of African Americans still have access to some sort of the Hope Scholarship.
All right, so we're going to listen to the audio. If you have not seen it on TV yet, you will. But it is Stacey Abrams looking straight into the camera and saying this.
I'm Stacey Abrams. It's almost election day. And now my opponent is attacking my character and my record by lying and refusing to tell the whole story. The Hope Scholarship was in crisis. The Republican plan would have gutted the program. I fought back and demanded we protect our most vulnerable students. Today, 500,000 four-year-olds have attended the pre-K program I protected. And 100% of African-American students still have access to Hope. Stacey Evans is being dishonest, taking a page out of the Republican playbook, betting you will stay home. That's not hope. That's hurtful. I was raised in a family that struggled to stay above the poverty line, but they taught us to fight for what's right and to value education. Through hard work, I went to Spelman College and Yale Law School, so I know what it's like to struggle to pay for an education. As governor, I will expand Hope, and I have bold, detailed plans so that Georgians have the freedom and opportunity to thrive. Please join me.
It's a good spot, Jim.
It's a good spot, and that phrase that Stacey Evans is, quote, betting you will stay home, I think that gets to those numbers that we talked at the front end of this program, that you have the surge of white voters coming back into the Democratic Party. Yeah. I think that's where that language comes from.
It is a good spot. I was there in 2011. The pain of the recession, the pain of the austerity cuts. I was on the board of a pre-K nonprofit that served disabled children. The pre-K issues are being lost in this debate. We were going to lose tremendous resources for pre-K. And there are many of us, me included, who believe the pre-K money is the strongest, most viable source of help to impoverished children in our high poverty child state.
Buddy?
Let me say this, that the hit dog always hollers, and it was pretty evident that she is getting to her by this. And I remember when this came up, and I was on your program in which I expressed some concerns at that time back in 2011. And thank God that the Senate came in, Jason Carter in particular, the Senate came in and helped solve the problem that the House had, frankly, walked away from. So, in my
what does
opinion,
that mean? I, solve I, the problem in what way? Make sure that our...
And made it more accessible. It did away with a lot of the draconian cuts that got through the House. But now I think it's all better. Let me say, and finally, conclusion, I always try to keep these outside people from coming in on my campaign. And the problem is outside people want to come in. Kamala Harris probably wanted to come in. She won't change one vote. And frankly speaking, these people often get in the way of the campaign when you're trying to do the best you can, and they want to come in, have to be entertained.
All right,
Did you, Heath?
I got to get a break in. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the Republican gubernatorial race and a statement Casey Cagle has now made about helping President Trump secure the borders. We'll do that after this message.
Hey, this is David Green, host of Morning Edition. I'm here to talk with you about that poking feeling, the one that keeps reminding you to support public radio. You can support the programs you love by donating your used vehicle. That old car or truck could be worth hundreds of dollars to this station. All you have to do is call, and you might even receive a tax deduction.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR and thanks.
We are back on Political Rewind. Mary Margaret Oliver, Buddy Darden, Heath Garrett, and Jim Galloway are with me. You know, Buddy is so charged up about this race, Mary Margaret, during the break, he was still going at it. I mean, this is exciting to watch you like
no,
this.
No, what I was saying is that these people come in and get in the way, and during the Michelle Nunn campaign, Tim Kaine came in for a whole day, and they had to find something to do, so I had to go around and find things for him to do.
All right.
The whole time.
Okay. Thank you, Buddy Darden. Let's turn to the Republican contest. Heath Garrett, we've got a statement now from Casey Cagle saying that when he's governor, assuming he's elected governor, he will respond to President Trump's request that states send National Guard to the border. He says this: in our state, we've led the nation in cracking down on illegal immigration. We're just treating symptoms till we get to the root of the problem. I've led the fight against sanctuary cities in Decatur. Cannot pass up the opportunity to hit Mary Margaret's town.
Please.
but I share President's – I helped pass one of the toughest laws against illegal immigration in the country. I share President Trump's frustration that the illegal border crossings continue. I'll send the best National Guard to bolster Operation Guardian support. Smart move on his part?
Politically smart, public policy. It's actually, we actually did this during the Bush administration. People have just forgotten about National Guard going to the border at that time. You put the word Trump with it, and it becomes much more electrifying. They've always had a role, so to speak, in this regard. However, it's definitely smart Republican primary politics, and it's the type of issue that doesn't hurt in the general election either, because it's focused on sanctuary cities and on the border. You talk about border security, you talk about sanctuary cities, Republicans win in the general election. When it becomes something beyond that, and it looks like you're going after people or their children, DACA and those kind of issues, not smart politically.
So are we talking about the Mexico border and not Alabama, right?
Yes, we are. We might want to clarify.
So, Jim, let me ask this question. I presumably, the migrant workers who help Georgia farmers are coming from across the Mexican border to work in the fields. So I get that ideologically, this is where he needs to come down. But in the long run, if I'm a farmer down there in South Georgia, I might not be so thrilled about the secured borders.
Yeah. You want the kind of the porous effect, unless they can get the visa system straightened out, and that's what you want more than anything. That's what you want more than anything else. I think, Bill, I think what we're seeing is a Casey Cagle who is pretty much now acknowledging that he's going to be in a runoff with one of two people, Brian Kemp or Hunter Hill. And of course, Brian Kemp has really laid into the illegal
Brian
immigration.
Brian Trump is going to take his pickup truck out and personally pick up undocumented residents.
Right. And Hunter Hill hasn't gone that far, but he's in the same camp. And of course, Michael Williams has got a TV and radio ad saying the same thing.
Let's listen to Michael Williams' radio ad, because while Casey Cagle now is trying to align himself with Trump and become a Trumpian politician, Michael Williams goes full throat for that.
I'm Michael Williams, candidate for governor. I was the first elected official in Georgia to endorse Donald Trump. I even served as his state co-chair. Where were my opponents? They wouldn't even endorse Trump against Hillary. No matter what they claim during election season, they're all owned by the establishment. That's why I'm self-funding my own campaign. I'll cut taxes, deport illegals, and destroy the corrupt establishment. I'm Michael Williams, the pro-Trump conservative for governor. I'm asking for your vote.
If Casey Cagle becomes governor, David Ralston is going to be the primary source of power in the Capitol, in my view. And he did not allow 452 to come for a vote in day 40 of the General Assembly.
And this was, which bill was this?
It was one of the anti-immigrants, we don't like immigrants bills. And all of those suburban races, Gwinnett County particularly, that were up, that are up for grabs, and in the 6th and 7th Congressional District, I think that's why David Ralston didn't allow that. We're talking 2018. We're not talking about anything before this year. This year is totally unique. The anti-immigrant, ridiculous, give me a break, ads that we're seeing, I have a hard time believing you're going to be successful in November.
There are a couple of thoughts here. You can go too far, absolutely, on this issue. Number one, on the immigration issue, the Republicans need to stick to the substance and the facts, and they have to. It has to be on solid public policy initiatives around border security and around rule of law. The minute that it becomes viewed as anti-immigrant in any way, shape, or form, Republicans are going to lose in the long term, either in the general election and eventually in the primaries. And then the second factor of this is that I think candidates trying to tie themselves to Donald Trump, it's not working in most Republican primaries around the country. The people who were the co-chairs of the Trump and the folks who act most like Trump aren't winning a lot of Republican primaries unless they have something else going for them. And I think Michael Williams is going too far on the I'm with Trump and too far on some of his stances, even for the Republican primary. Casey Cagle is working a very nuanced approach to this, and I think the smart one, he can win the primary and still win the general election.
What do you think about Kemp and the pickup truck ad?
I think that it's going to help him in the Republican primary marginally with a few votes, but it definitely hurts him in the moving back towards the middle with investors, in the Republican primary and with suburban Republican voters in the eventual runoff and then potentially in the general election. And Brian's a friend of mine, but sometimes you get a little too cute.
I agree, Heath. What I was going to say, though, following up on what Mary Margaret said, is regardless of who the next governor is, David Ralston is still going to be the dominant figure in the Capitol, where we have a Republican or a Democratic governor.
Speaker of the House, to be clear.
Speaker of the House has placed himself in a situation I think is going to be very close to what Tom Murphy had at the apex of his power.
All right, let me get to a couple of comments from listeners real quickly. We got people watching in Macon. We've got people in Savannah, a number of other cities I can't get to at this moment. Robin Ford sends us a message on Facebook Live. She says, Buddy makes a good point about outside groups. Obviously, she agrees that you're disturbed to see them all coming in. And then we had a comment from Larry Lowe on Facebook. He says, I'm Team Abrams, but her nationalizing her campaign is a concern. Trust. I knocked on doors during the Ossoff campaign and lived in the district. Voters were exhausted, including myself. So that's Facebook. On Twitter, we have Angela Ford says, I see Cagle's ads, and I didn't know Georgia has sanctuary cities. If we don't, why is he campaigning on it? Mary Margaret, to be clear, we don't have what the cities, to the best of my knowledge, nobody calls themselves a sanctuary city here, as say the city of Chicago and a couple others do, but they have refused to work with ICE to round up undocumented people.
Don't believe that's accurate. City of Decatur doesn't have a jail. It has a closet with one little seat, and it says jail, 8 a.m. jail judges to let people out. You know, the lady that was giving herself a shower with a hose pipe without any clothes on, she was subject to the Saturday morning jail so she could go home. The idea that Decatur is a sanctuary city is legally ridiculous. My friends in Decatur that are going to make a lot of money on this lawsuit, I'm happy for them, but it's a bridge too far. City
of
Decatur.
This is a lawsuit that Casey Cagle has inspired
and
has
generated complaints in front of his whatever that group is that Phil Ken is and opines about immigration problems. It's a waste of taxpayer money. It's a waste of time. It's a diversion. We have serious crime issues in this state. We had the largest drug bust in the city of Avondale last week, where they're actually producing marijuana oil. I'd never seen that in a drug bust. We have serious drug issues. And to spend our taxpayer money on sanctuary city allegations is ridiculous.
Heath?
Well, and what we have is several cities, Clarkston, city of Decatur, they're making verbal kind of statements as if they want to become sanctuary cities. I do think it's correct constitutionally you can't become a sanctuary city. However, if mayors and if police departments are going, they're not, we have a legitimate argument here about the rule of law. When cities start to pick or choose which federal laws and which times they want to work with federal law enforcement agencies, that's a substantive problem. That's the root of the sanctuary city argument by Republicans. And so Casey is right to go after these cities who are talking about it to send them a message. I think there's a legitimate question how substantive this is. But we do have a rule of law argument here, and I don't think we ought to follow the likes of California and Chicago and others and start trying to pick and choose which federal agency we want to work with when we want to work with them.
On the flip side of that problem, last Tuesday, elections in North Carolina, two incumbent sheriffs lost their elections, one from Mecklenburg County and one from Durham County. And in each case, it was their support for ICE agents that did them in.
Yeah. I'm really glad you reminded us of that. It was an issue we never got to on the show last week, so thank you very much.
Mecklenburg County is Charlotte,
right?
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you assume that – go ahead,
Mayor Narger. The anti-immigrant, as he said very thoughtfully, when you personalize against this person, this family, my – in Druid Hills, landscape business, 20-year guy was deported. He went in for his appointment. He's deported. His son goes to University of Georgia. My constituents are going ape. They want me to make sure Johnny Isaacson can fix this, and Johnny Isaacson can't fix this.
All right,
they're personally offended when it personally touches them, whether it's a farmer or a Druid Hills yard person.
I think it's going to be interesting to watch in the fall campaign as we see the full effect of some of the Trump administration decisions on immigration. We're now learning, for instance, that the Trump administration is putting together a policy for review which would deny, if you are a green card holder and you're taking Medicaid or if you're getting any other benefits in the safety net, social network, safety net, you will lose the green card. They're weighing that right now. That was reported by a number of newspapers this morning. They've decided on a policy to separate children from parents, and the chief of staff, John Kelly, made a statement about that the other day, saying it's tough, but we've got to do it.
Yeah, these are families coming to the border and asking for political asylum.
Right. So the question is going to be, buddy, as you start expanding how much the Trump administration chooses to do, is the Republican base going to vote, you know, or how are candidates going to position themselves, congressional candidates particularly, on this, and how are they going to vote?
Well, I've got a lot of Republican friends who support the renewal of DACA or the extension of DACA. Yeah. I've got a lot of them who don't want to see Medicaid or Medicare taken away or from green card holders. And the problem is most Republican voters, as well as most Democratic voters, in my opinion, want to see the government kind of kept between the lines. Most people belong to what we call roughly the center of American politics. Georgia might be a little right of center. Some other states might be a little left of center. But generally speaking, I think the general population is somewhere near the middle.
All right, well, watch and see how this all works out, Jim.
Well, just one last question for Heath. We've got 16 Republicans in the House who are trying to press Paul Ryan for a vote on DACA.
The discharge papers.
What are you hearing? Does that have legs?
It does have a little bit of legs politically, and it may be some cover, right, at the end of the day for some of these campaigns. I do think that I have a theory that Trump may be a little bit like a fox on this issue. He's exerting some pain on temporary protected status, on some of these other rules, but he's also simultaneously gone farther than any Republican ever has by saying, I want to fix DACA and I want to fix quotas and allow more people in. Is he negotiating with the Democrats on immigration for comprehensive reform the way he is on foreign policy with North Korea and others? It's a give and take.
I apologize for interrupting. We will look at that in more depth when we have more time. But you're right, Jim, and we should point out to our listeners, if they haven't seen these stories yet, we're talking about Republicans who want the House to take up four immigration bills that would, in fact, in varying ways, give more protection, certainly to DACA recipients, but also to expanding on what the immigration laws would be, And one of them is a blank bill, Mary Margaret, that the Speaker could craft himself. So we're going to watch very carefully to see if they can get the votes they need to bring this to the floor. It's going to be a fascinating discussion. All right, let's move on. Jim, let's start with, we haven't talked at all really about, except in the most general terms, about the 7th District, 6th District Democratic races. The 7th District Democratic primary, campaigning for the right to take on incumbent Rob Woodall, has attracted some really interesting candidates, I think. So you have David Kim, who's first generation American. His parents are from Korea. He's started a business that has been tremendously successful. He's now running for that seat. You have Ethan Pham, who is in fact a Vietnamese immigrant, also very, very successful in his professional life. They're running for that seat. And then you have Carolyn Bordeaux, who is kind of out front in terms of fundraising, I think. In fact, Mary Margaret, let me go to you on this. She's raised more money than anybody else. She's a Georgia State professor, and it looks like it's going to be a runoff and that she'll be one of the candidates in it, yes?
She's done a great job in this campaign. She's very popular among a lot of the folks I talk to. She's gotten Emily's List endorsement, which is represents a good amount of substantial financial support. I predict she and Mr. Kim will be in the runoff.
You've got Ms. Bordeaux has actually outraised Rob Woolard.
It's in April. Several report, and, at least and two reporting periods, so,
and that has raised some eyebrows in Republican circles. You've got two other women in this race: Kathleen Allen and Melissa Davis, and truly the only kind of traditional Democrat in the race is Steve Riley, who I believe was chairman of the 7th District Democratic Party.
Isn't that, Betty, that's so fascinating to see these newcomers with such varied backgrounds.
I know Representative Mary Margaret Oliver will remember this, but maybe Jim and Heath might not know that at one time she worked for the Senate Budget Caucus and was a very, very effective member of the staff of the Georgia Senate when it came to their budget matters. She worked for then-chairman and now-chairman Jack Hill. He might have been a Democrat back then, and he's a Republican now, but he's still the same Jack Hill who overlooks that. But let me say this about Rob Woodall. Here's one of the great ironies of the entire political situation is, as far as members of Congress goes, even though he's moved over to the right during the era of Trump, he actually was probably the most moderate of the whole group. And I think many of the positions he took that I've looked at back over the years seem to be a whole lot more reasonable and more toward the center than most of his Republican colleagues.
Which is probably, Heath, why he's drawn a Republican opponent who's very far to the right of him, Shane Hazel, I think is the name. Is that right?
That's right.
Probably hasn't raised any money, probably doesn't have much of a chance, you would think. But there are races out there where incumbents are being outflanked to the right, and they've gotten into trouble because of it.
No, this district will be watched and studied after this election, both on the Democratic side and the Republican side, because of changing demographics in suburban, ex-urban Atlanta, Georgia, because you have a center-right congressional member who's not as far to the right as part of his base. Forsyth County is still one of the most conservative and Republican. It's the heart of his district. You know, some of those constituents up there don't think he's far enough to the right, so he gets a primary challenge, and then he's going to have to turn right back around and raise money against an intense, you know, fired-up Democratic base who's coming out, in their mind, to vote against Donald Trump. They may not even know their candidate's name, right, but they're coming in November. There's some intensity there for fundraising. The demographics are still such that it's probably Republican plus enough for Rob to survive the general election, even if there's a, quote, blue wave.
I mentioned on the show on Friday that the Cook Report, which is really the authoritative source on these things, has Woodall a little bit more likely to survive against a Democratic challenge than Karen Handel. I would have thought it would have been exactly the opposite at this point.
I would have thought the same thing. But let me say this about Rob Woodall. He has roots in Hancock County. His parents and grandparents grew up in Hancock County, so he has rural Georgia roots.
Mary Margaret, just to put a period on this part of the conversation, there are many people who look at that 7th District race and they say, this is the future of American politics. It's the future of Georgia politics, and Republicans had better figure out a way to get on board.
I think it's definitely the future. You look at, again, Speaker Ralston would not allow 452 come for a vote.
Tell them what 452 was.
That's the anti-immigrant bill we talked about a little bit earlier. It's interesting to contrast the 6th and the 7th. The 6th is more slightly more Democratic than the 7th, and you've got very, very active congressional races going on with exactly representative to me of those 100,000 people that came to the Capitol for the first time in 2018 based on their agitation, their intensity, their concern about what's happening with President Trump.
Jim, any final thoughts about that 7th district race?
Well, I would say that all due regard to the Cook report, what the 7th offers is a little bit more simplified geography in that it is simply it's Gwinnett County and a slice of Forsyth.
I think that's really true. And as good as Cook's people are, there are times when being not from here makes a huge difference in how you analyze a race. We see that frequently with polling companies that are national firms that try to poll a state like Georgia. They just don't know it well enough to do it properly.
Yeah, in the 6th District, you've got East Cobb, you've got a smidgen of Buckhead, you've got North Fulton,
Brookhaven.
And you've got Brookhaven, and you've got Dunwoody.
Yeah,
right.
All right.
Buddy, last comment. I represented the Cobb County portion of what is now the 6th district for a number of years. And I found out that out in East Cobb, in particular, these were moderate Republicans. These were what we call Chamber of Commerce Republicans, not carry your gun to church kind of Republicans. And they are very, very moderate in their views on most issues, especially social issues.
All right, I got to get to a break. And as I do, Buddy Darden, we have a great tweet just for you from Speaking Fiction to Power. That's the handle. Noticed Congressman Darden doesn't seem to have a Twitter account. You'd think his Hollywood agent, you know, the one who books him for film and voice work as a classic Southern gentleman, could set him up. This is Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, the life and death of Robin Williams. We talk with New York Times culture reporter David Itzkoff, who's written a new biography of the comic and actor. And we speak with Kristen Ritter, star of the Netflix show Jessica Jones, which has been renewed for a third season. She also played Jesse Pinkman's girlfriend in Breaking Bad. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 here on GPB.
Councilman Khalid, who is out down in South Fulton and is a frequent listener to the show and often sends us his comments, for which we're grateful, says this: some new voters are coming out specifically for down-ballot candidates like Rahman in Senate District 5, Holly in House District 111, who are both part of NAACP cases, or Kathleen Allen in Georgia 7th, and not for either of the Stacey's, making the point that all politics is really local in those cases. Thanks for that, Councilman Khalid. Breaking news story that I wanted to get to at some point during the show today. Jim, we know that the Supreme Court is going to start rolling out some very important decisions over starting today and over the next couple of weeks. Today, the one that really a lot of people have been watching is on sports, fantasy sports.
Betting on games. Betting on specific on games. Game outcomes.
Right. They said that it is, and correct me if I don't have this completely correct, they said that if Congress didn't act to outlaw these organizations, like I think DraftKings is one of the big ones, then states had a right to decide for themselves whether they wanted to make them legal or not.
Well, yeah, what they did was it was a 6-3 vote to overturn the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act of 1992, which I feel certain that Buddy Darden voted in favor of.
I have absolutely no recollection.
And in that bill, the only state that's allowed that is allowed to conduct betting on single game outcomes is the state of Nevada. And the lawsuit was brought by the state of New Jersey, which wants it to help underwrite the gambling and casino business to make it to help them make those operations a little bit more financially lucrative, I suppose.
So you know it. What's interesting about this, Mary Margaret, is that the daily fantasy sports companies. They've always said, no, we're not involved in gambling. But now they can't. Because what it's been about is how you pick a team and you follow the team. It hasn't been about game outcomes, results. Now they can legally, as long as the Congress doesn't interfere, as long as the state allows it, they can now actually become betting organizations.
I expect a whole lot of new lobbyists are going to be signed up to come to the Capitol with the lot of lobbyists that have already been there several years on the casino issue. This is something that will interest the members of the General Assembly. They play these fantasy sports. We're a sports team. We're a big sports state. This is going to be a new big business issue for our General Assembly in 2019.
But it will be a much more upfront and honest discussion this time.
Yes.
But what we've had is something like House Bill 118, which is Trey Kelly out of Cedar Towns. He's a Republican. It was his bill. That it was part of the national effort built by these fantasy sports operations, just simply to declare sports fantasies not gambling, because the legislature says it's not gambling. It was a reaction to a decision that Sam Mullins made to the contrary.
As Attorney General.
To the contrary,
yeah.
Right.
Interesting. This is going to be Chris Christie's legacy to the state of New Jersey, Heath. This is something he was very involved in there.
There's definitely, this is the revitalized Atlantic City, you know, lawsuit at the end of the yeah. day. But Mary Margaret's exactly correct. We're going to have all fantasy sports groups, which are backed, by the way, by major media institutions in this country, right, and technology companies. So they're not just your traditional MGMs and gaming coming out of Las Vegas, along with your casino folks trying to figure out how they can open it up in Georgia. I think there's some real limitations here because of our Constitution, but they're going to make the case.
I want to know, Heath, can we expect your client, Attorney General Chris Carr, to take a position on this issue?
Chris Carr is going to follow the law as it is written by the legislature.
Oh, buddy, says the guy who has no idea how he voted on this back when he was a member of the Congress. Let me turn to another interesting story that I saw in your newspaper, Jim Galloway. You know, we've talked a lot about the fact that this year, Governor Deal and the Republican legislature did themselves a huge favor by finally fully funding QBE, the Quality Basic Education Act, for the first time in many, many years, and that it was going to be something that Republicans could breathe a sigh of relief on. They wouldn't have to go into races, you know, defending against the fact they're not giving the schools what they need. But now you've got two Republican candidates, along with the Democrats, for school superintendent saying, yes, it's a good thing, thank goodness, but it doesn't make up for all the money that's been lost in the past, and that is especially true of teacher salaries. I find that interesting.
And it's absolutely true, and it will stir some people, but it won't create the kind of the political crisis the Republicans are facing in places like Oklahoma, West Virginia, and Arizona. It will be a tamped-down version of that, I think.
Mary Margaret, what's your take on that?
I think people care about their public schools. And Fannin County, where David Ralston is, voted against Opportunity Schools District Constitutional Amendment. People care about their public schools. The fact that we've now giving $100 million of taxpayer money to private schools under the alleged scholarship program is a big fact. And the funding of QBE formula, doing away with the austerity, was necessary as policy, but it also takes away a very significant political weapon from the Democrats.
Yeah, Governor Deal does deserve a little credit. He promised that if he voted for the Opportunity Schools, he would fully fund QBE, and at the end of the day, he got there. Now, Republicans, we would have preferred to reform it and figure out how to make it a better formula. This formula was, I guess, late
80s. Oh, it definitely needs to be funded. The last two commissions have stepped away from good recommendations.
Good recommendations. We don't have a formula for the 21st century in education. It's a good first start. But, yes, most Republicans would argue we need to continue to upgrade the funding and balance it out correctly because we've had such major population shifts.
You know, Keith, you suddenly made me think of something. And, buddy, you know, Nathan Deal ran on redoing the Quality Basic Education Act, which is mid-1980s. Joe Frank Harris was governor. He said it two terms in a row. He was going to get to that. He was never able to. It was such a hot political
issue.
Neither
did Sonny. Neither did Sonny Perdue.
But my point is, to the best of my knowledge, we haven't heard any gubernatorial candidate take that on as an issue, in at least up till now in this campaign.
No, we haven't. I think it's just too complicated for them to understand or to appreciate. And it's not something that you can just come in and wave a magic wand and do it overnight. But while I've got a mic, I want to commend the Democratic members of the legislature for trying to oppose the $100 million private school giveaway.
Westminster, Lovett, Padilla in my area, $100 million.
All right. Jim, no one is talking about that in this campaign, even though Nathan Deal made that a big...
There is no way you can fit that on a bumper sticker.
It is it is way too complicated. The commission's worked very hard and had good recommendations, but here's the simple way that I understand it, and I'm being overly simplistic. We have the highest poverty rate for children of the topmost 10 populated states. Poverty is not considered in relation to how we distribute our education money. If you want to make this a bumper sticker issue, you think about poor children's right to a public education.
Just like a little Republican equal time here, but this is a good issue for Republicans this year, and there's a great compromise between my moderate Democratic friends and the Republicans in the legislature over the next couple of years if they really want to do something to advance the state of Georgia.
Well, you might ask whether, you know, part of the problem here, the problem, not part of it, is that you're talking now about richer counties with more tax money, bigger tax base, having to give up some of their money and send it to the counties that do not have that. That's a tough sell, even in a district that is Democratic and like Mary Margaret represents and that, you know, prides itself on caring about other people. That's hard, Heath.
It's all about the money. And the little secret is that the metro counties already send about $500 million dollars a year to rural counties.
Precisely.
Already. So it's all about the money.
Right. It is about the money.
All right. I'm sorry to interrupt us. We were going to talk about the Pentagon report on the new health system that's been put in place, a digital health reporting system. We're going to park that because we'll take that up on Wednesday. It's a complicated issue. It's an important one. It's going to end up on the desk of your friend, Johnny Isaacson, as head of the Veterans Affairs Committee. So we'll talk about that on another show this week. Okay? Jim Galloway, thank you for being here. I look forward to seeing you back on Friday. Mary Margaret Oliver, thanks for coming in. Buddy Darden, Heath Garrett. It's been great to have all of you on the show today. Wednesday, we have another matchup between Sam Olens and Michael Thurman, the CEO of the DeKalb County Commission. Those shows are always fun. We'll see you for that on Wednesday at 2 o'clock. And next Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, on Election Day, we will be doing a special live edition of Political Rewind at 2. So put that in the back of your heads as something that you may want to tune in for. I'm Bill Nigut. Thanks for joining us. See you again on Wednesday.